Coming up, how can you resolve conflict in your life?
You really can have it all, but all, but all, but all, but all, but all. Welcome to Having It All, featuring experts and pioneers in health, wealth, relationships, and spirituality, creating a healthier, wealthier, happier you. And now, here's your host, the Miracle Mama, Marbeth Dunn.
Woohoo! It is great to be here tonight. Wow. A little later on the show, we have a wonderful guest. But first, many, many years ago, high on a mountaintop in Haiti, I sat in my small tin-roofed home, and a friend showed me how to manifest whatever I desired by chanting a Buddhist chant. Now, it didn't seem possible, but I was so curious, and I followed her directions to the letter, and much to my amazement, I began to create my reality. It was really quite astounding. Doesn't that sound amazing? Wouldn't you love to create your reality? My friend Adrian explained that by focusing on what I desired and chanting the six sounds of the mantra repetitively, I could attract a cause to create the singular effect that I desired. So she explained that it was a different, more creative way of using the law of cause and effect. Here in the West, we're taught that cause creates effect. A is always going to equal B. So there's, you know, you have your cause and it always creates an effect. Well, that's true. But this Japanese sect of Buddhism that she followed harnessed the power of sound to attract the cause that would create the effect that you desired. So it's pretty cool. Right? And what's really fascinating is I learned that by chanting for what I desired, I would either receive it or lose my desire for it. Now, isn't that cool? It's kind of like rubbing a magic lamp, right? Well, I wasn't sure I believed it, but we were sleeping on a straw mattress. You know, we were up on this mountaintop without electricity or city water, and I had straws poking through the cotton. And through the sheets, it wasn't really comfortable. So we decided to chant for a brand new queen-size foam mattress. We wanted to sleep on it the very next night. And we chanted for about 15 minutes. It was our trial run. And we went to sleep. And the next morning, we woke up early. We took two jitneys down the mountain from our home because we were way up on a mountaintop, all the way down to the bottom. And then we caught what they call a tap-tap, which is a brightly colored pickup truck that has a kind of a hutch on the back with seats. And we took that over to where the mattress factory was. And then we had a hike up a hill to the factory. And we walked into the factory, which was very modern for Haiti. And we told the receptionist that we wanted to buy a queen-size mattress. And she asked us if we wanted it covered. We hadn't considered that, but it sounded good, right? And then she told us that tomorrow was a holiday, and then there was the weekend, and we'd probably get it next week. And that sounded about right for Haiti. You know, it's a manana culture. Things happen a lot slower than they do in more westernized cultures. And we weren't really expecting very much from the chanting. You know, it was a novel idea. We tried it. So we thanked her, and we were almost to the door when she stopped us, and she cried, "Wait! Wait, would you like it this afternoon?" Well, I about dropped my drawers. I couldn't believe my ears. Would you? Would you believe your ears? She ran to the back, and then she told us to come back around 3 o'clock. And that's how that night we slept on a brand new foam covered queen size mattress. And while the chanting was really cool, and I did do it for quite a while, It's amazingly effective for some things. It was great for manifesting a queen size bed. It ended a taxi strike in Puerto Rico when I needed to catch a plane. And it was really good for manifesting a lot of material things. And I think some physical or spiritual things as well. But what I found was, if I had attachment to something, if I really needed it, it didn't happen. So are you wondering how chanting a particular chant can help you create what you desire? Would you like to know how you can use the power of the universe to create a life of health, wealth, and happiness? Well, I teach this in my 21-Day Miracle Challenge and my Miracle Mastermind. I also teach how to resolve conflict and why peace is so important for creating miracles. I love peace, and I was so excited to learn about our guest, Dr. Ellie Zarabian. She is the founder and spiritual director of the Centerpiece Foundation and the Centerpiece Project. She's also the forthcoming author of 6 Degrees of Liberation, Finding Inner Peace Through Conflict. She helps empower individuals and mobilize communities to heal generational trauma, learning more effective ways to communicate and reduce conflict to calm using mind, body, and spiritual approaches to healing and transcendence. Welcome, Dr. Ellie. I am so excited to have you on my show.
Thank you, Maribeth. It's great to be here.
Oh, you had quite a bunch of conflict growing up, didn't you?
I sure did.
So tell me about it. What made you choose a career in peace?
Well, let's see. I am a child survivor of war. When I was about 8, 9 years old, my country of origin, which is Iran, I'm Iranian American, went into war with its neighboring country of Iraq. And there was a revolution, and the people overthrew the Shah of Iran and started to crack down on supporters of the Shah. And so as a child, I saw some horrific events happened right in front of me, lynchings, killings, assassinations, bombs. And it's an experience that you wouldn't want anyone to go through, let alone a child.
No, of course not.
Right. And when you witness such horrific events as a child, you either end up becoming a victim of violence later on in life, or a perpetrator of violence, or a bystander, which essentially is someone who just watches terrible things and doesn't do anything about it. So I didn't have much, you know, as far as choice goes. And we were lucky enough to survive the war and the revolution. We were able to escape my country and immigrate to Great Britain. We became refugees there and then eventually immigrated to the United States when I was 13 years old. But the devastating effects of all that I experienced stayed with my family. It affected the family system. It affected my parents' ability to work and to be good parents to us, their children. And it basically affected the well-being of our family. And I was in my 20s when I was feeling very depressed, very hopeless, and had nowhere to turn to, had experienced all these horrific events in childhood, and then later on, a lot of abuse. And it was then that I realized that I had a choice. Either I was going to stay in that place of victimization and continue repeating the trauma of my childhood as an adult, or I had to do something about it. And so that's when I chose to turn my life around. And it was then that I started to actively work on myself and understand the nature of conflict, how it manifests in the individual life, in my own life, and then how it expands out into the world and gets played out between countries, different ethnicities, different religious groups, etc. And so I've basically devoted my life to understanding, studying, practicing nonviolent communication and teaching others how to turn conflict around in their own life and create calm in its place.
That's fabulous. And you mentioned one thing that I find so crucial to making change, and that's realizing that you can choose something different, that we're not locked in. That's so huge.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It kind of goes hand in hand with what you were saying earlier about the power of manifestation. Putting your mind towards something that is greater than yourself and practicing this single-pointed mindfulness and awareness through whatever means to create change in your life, right?
That's really, really powerful. And in my world, I learned to focus on being peaceful. And that was huge. That's why I was so attracted to what you're doing. Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit about conflict and why people have so much conflict in their lives.
Sure. So essentially, if you're a human being, you're going to experience conflict. There's no way out of it. There's no way around it.
Do you mean that we have conflicting desires? How do you mean that?
Well, there's only just one Marbeth Dunn, right? There's not two of you.
Not that I know of.
Right. And there's just one Elise Arabian. There's not two of me, as far as I know.
Okay.
And so where there is diversity, which means not one, not two of you or three of you, but just one of you, and you come together with someone else, there is naturally going to be differences. You have different genes. You have different brain mechanism. You have a different environment that you were raised in. You have a different culture that you were brought up in.
Different desires.
So wherever there is difference, or I call it diversity, there's bound to be conflict. It's
or duality is another good word for it.
That's right. That's right. And you find that everywhere in nature. But what happens with human beings is that we haven't quite learned how to work with this difference or this duality. We tend to see it as something that's negative, and we don't have the means or the tools or the skills to be able to work with difference or with diversity. And so it ends up creating often a lot of problems in our own individual life, and then later on between partners, between friends, family members, and of course then expand that out into the world.
It's so interesting that now there seems to be a quite a lot of focus in spiritual communities on oneness, on focusing on our similarities rather than our differences. But the way that you experience so much trauma, I can imagine how it affected you. And I think it's so wonderful that this was a tool for you, that you were able to overcome it and step into a place of service now for humanity, to be able to offer a way to resolve conflict for so many people who are suffering.
Yes, it has been a blessing in disguise. You know, it didn't come about in an easy way. Of course, I've had to struggle and suffer through a lot of my own trauma, like you said, but by staying with the work and doing the inner work and doing the spiritual work, it has enabled me to heal the trauma in my own life and then be able to offer it as service to others. You're absolutely right.
Now, you have a very interesting background because you are also Sufi. Is that correct?
That's right. So because I was born and raised in Iran, the spiritual sort of enlightened part of the culture does come from Sufism. And so a lot of Iranians readily practice the teachings of the Sufi masters. And the teachings go beyond religious diversity, ethnic diversity, language barriers, etc. Because there are many different religions and sects and ethnicities in Iran. If you go to any Iranian home, whether they're Christian, Muslim, Jewish, Baha'i, Zoroastrian, you will find that they embrace Sufi teachings. For example, here in the West, everyone has heard of Rumi, right? I'm sure you've heard of Rumi.
Of course.
Yes. So he's one of our Sufi teachers. And there are many like him. And many Iranians have the books of these Sufi masters and read the poetry. And it's also part of our culture in the music, in the language. It's very much the fabric of our culture. And so I grew up in my formative years hearing Sufi music. My father was an avid reader of Sufi philosophy, and he was my first teacher. And so my roots are grounded in Sufism. But I lost that through this process of transitioning into the West. And then later on, I pursued my degree in psychology. And it wasn't until my adult years where I returned back to my roots and incorporated the Sufi teachings in my practice as a psychologist and also as an educator.
Well, it's so cool. And Sufism is very mystical.
That's right.
Is it not?
Absolutely.
And also your grandmother was a healer.
She was. I don't know if she would call herself that. A lot of the older generation Iranians practiced some esoteric form of spirituality. Sometimes it bordered on black magic, superstition, folk healing. And so I had to really study it carefully and filter out a lot of the stuff that was based on superstition or, magical thinking, and really distill the essence of what this tradition has to offer. And of course, my background in psychology has helped quite a bit.
Fabulous. So you were able to also use some of the ancient healing that has been transferred down through generations as well.
That's right.
Fabulous. I love it. So, well, you have such an interesting profession now. So you get to work with people who are experiencing conflict. And what I'd like to, we're about to take a break in about another minute, and then I want to get into what you discovered in your own work about conflict, because I think that's going to be a very juicy topic.
Yes, I think so too.
Well, we'll be back in just a minute. We're going to get into your own work about conflict in just a minute. Thank you. Is the daily grind getting you down? How would you like to trade in your stress and struggle for peace, love, abundance, and joy? I'm Marbeth Dunn, the Miracle Mama. Even if you are struggling in your relationships, health, or peace of mind, you can have it all. Don't waste another day. Learn my simple secrets to eliminate stress and struggle in my free report, 7 Easy Steps to Harness the Power of Miracles. Go to miracles101.com to get your free report today. That's miracles101.com. And we are back. So now tell us, we've been waiting with bated breath. We want to learn what you discovered in your own work about conflict.
Great. So part of what I've done, and I've outlined this in my forthcoming book, 60 Degrees of Liberation, is to break this area down into six parts that need to be healed in order to address conflict. And these six parts of these six areas of the self include one's biography, one's family and ancestral history, one's culture, one's body, religion, and hierarchy. So if you look around what's happening maybe in your own personal life or in the lives of those around you or what's happening in the world, you will see that the conflict that they're facing could fall anywhere within these six areas. And if we're able to pinpoint which one of these areas the conflict is manifesting from, then we can go back to its roots and heal the conflict in that particular area of one's life and then see the ripple effect in other areas.
That's very cool. Mm-hmm. So how do you go about the healing? Do you approach it more from a psychological vantage point, or do you utilize some of the Sufi techniques or ancient healing techniques? What do you do?
Yes. So it really depends on the person or the group I'm working with.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yes. So everybody comes with their own, way that conflict has manifested in their life. And some people are very attuned to what's happened to them. They're very articulate. They can talk about where the trauma has stemmed from and are able to delve into it and talk about it. Others may not have access to the trauma. And it may be buried deep within their psyche or in their body. And so I may have to use other modalities to help them release the trauma. And so if I use talk therapy, then I use what the Sufis call fire talk, which is, on the surface, it looks like we're just talking, but really what I'm doing is I'm accessing their subconscious. And I'm inviting them to tap into their higher self and begin the healing process within themselves as we're talking through it. And if they don't have access to the memories or they're unable to articulate what's happening, then sometimes I use therapeutic touch, which is essentially hands-on healing.
Sure.
I was a body worker for many years. And as you know, people store trauma in their body.
And oh, yes.
And so if they're unable to access it verbally, then we have to use other modalities to reach the trauma. And therapeutic touch is a way that I work with people.
Excellent. Yeah. And I love that. I love that you can use. So, and I do, too. In my work, there's so many ways of that people need it. Sometimes I find that conflicts or people's issues can stem from another lifetime, or it can be an ancestral pattern.
That's
and I know you find that too.
Absolutely. You know, sometimes people come in and they seemingly have a very good life. They have a good job, they have a partner, and then they have kids, the house, the whole bit. And yet they don't know why they're suffering or they're struggling. And after digging around a little bit, you know, we'll find that it's actually something that's ancestral. It's been passed down. And it has nothing to do necessarily with them in this lifetime.
Yeah, very interesting. Yeah. And I find that quite a bit. So what do we have to do? What, do we all have to work on ourselves actively to dissolve conflict, or are we doomed to live a life of misery?
I hope not. No, we all have a choice. And I know you're a firm believer in that too. We're given the choice to either end the conflict in this lifetime or to just ignore it and live it out and come back and live it out again. So it is a conscious choice. You must want to do this work. You must want to and be ready to do this work.
So true.
Yeah.
So true. You know, so many times I'll hear people saying, oh, but my spouse or someone, they really need to do the work, but they have to be ready. That's the issue. They're not ready, and you can't force them to do something that they're not ready to do, that they don't want to do. So, absolutely. Yeah. So can you give me a story or a case study of some work that you've done?
Sure. Well, talking about ancestral history and how this can manifest in someone's life that's been passed down, about 2 years ago, I worked with a physician. He was an integrative psychiatrist who came to see me, and he was Iranian. He is Iranian American, and again, he seemingly his life seemed to be going really well. He had a thriving practice, a beautiful wife, a newborn daughter, and he didn't know why there's always this lingering depression that's been with him his entire life. So we did some of the work around fire talk, and we discovered that, of course, in his biography, there was a lot of myths that he grew up with. There's a lot of image issues being Iranian and how Iranians have been portrayed in the West, and he had to do a lot of healing around that. But he had to embrace the culture that he was born into and also raised in, so his Iranian-American background, he did a lot of work around that. But while he did improve significantly, I would say about 70%, there was still some lingering depression. And when he talked about it, I got the sense intuitively, my intuition led me to believe that this is ancestral work that needs to be done. This is not necessarily him. He's carrying something that's ancestral. But I didn't feel that it was time to address it. Again, like you said, the person has to be ready. And so we ended our session and he went off. And it was a few months later that he contacted me and he said, listen, my grandmother is nearing end of life, and she has always been such an exuberant and lively and happy person. And for whatever reason, now that she's nearing end of life, she has become this very, very angry, bitter person who's in constant pain and is asking us to end her life. She was requesting physician-assisted suicide. She was in a lot of pain. And he said, even though we have her on meds, we're giving her a lot of analgesics to deal with her pain, it seems like it's just not helping. This must be either emotional or spiritual pain. Can you help her? And that's when I knew this is my now opportunity to do the ancestral healing work. And I, of course, I said immediately, I said yes. And I proceeded to tell him that I need to do ancestral work, but that I need permission from him and his family to go see his grandmother. So he needs to talk to the family. And he did. And they all understood that, you know, I'm going to be doing ancestral work, and that I'm doctor of the soul and not doctor of medicine. And I'm not coming in to do psychology or psychiatry, but to do soul work. And so there was a collective agreement that that's okay. And so I went to see grandmother. She was, of course, bedridden and not really coherent, but she must have sensed that I was there. She embraced me, and she was very open to the healing session. And I began to do some therapeutic touch on her. And immediately, as soon as I put my hands on her, I was transported back in time and had this vision of this young woman who I felt came to me very strongly, asking for me to help her, telling me that her mother is not letting her go, and that she was in a way very adamant about me helping her to help the mother or grandmother to let this woman go. So I came back and I shared this story, not with grandmother, but with my client, the psychiatrist whom I had seen. I told him, I said, this is the story. I'm not exactly sure if this is in this lifetime, previous lifetimes, but this is what came to me. And he went and talked to the whole family, and the family couldn't believe that this happened. Because what came out of this was a secret, a family secret that had been buried for almost 40 years, which was a daughter. Grandmother had a daughter who was paraplegic. She had polio. She had polio, and was a beautiful person, a beautiful soul. And at some point, this doctor in Iran told the family, I can cure her, I'll do surgery on her, and she'll be cured. And so they put her under the knife, and the doctor was a quack. Ended up doing something to the daughter and left her in much worse condition. And the girl was in so much pain that she was apparently screaming day and night, night and day.
Oh.
It was just a horrific ending. I don't know whether she took her own life or she died, but it was just a very, very traumatic experience of how this young woman eventually passed away. And grandmother had held on to this for almost 40, 45 years. And as she was nearing her own end of life, she felt a lot of guilt, and she couldn't forgive herself, and she was very angry at herself and at God, and was not able to easily make her own transition. So it manifested in a lot of conflict, and it was affecting the whole family system. And so when this information came to light, then the healing began for this family, something that had been buried and not talked about for decades, now had a chance to be expressed and, of course, healed.
And so I love that. Yeah, that's beautiful. Go ahead.
So after a few sessions of working with both grandmother and her children, they were able to grieve and release their sister. And the mother was able to eventually forgive herself and make her peace with her higher power. And through the love of her family, she was able to eventually and peacefully make her transition with dignity.
That's very beautiful. I find that when we hold on to guilt, and torture ourselves with that, it just creates so much pain. And so often, so much of what we experience today could be because someone was shamed or felt a lot of guilt or trauma from a past life. So I think it's wonderful that you and I and there are other people as well are working with that. It's so important. So you work with individuals. You also work in groups. So tell me about your group work.
Yes. So a few years ago, when a lot of the terrorist activities, terrorism was happening here in the U.S. And when I say terrorism, I mean just, you know, everything that was happening with the school shootings.
Sure.
I see that as terrorism, too. And all the craziness that was happening around us, I became extremely concerned, both as a mother. I mean, I have young children, and of course, I became paranoid. Is someone going to walk into their school and start shooting, et cetera? And also as a healer, psychologist, I felt at that point, I felt very helpless. You know, what's happening? Why is it that we're having all these young men, really boys, all of them in their 20s, taking a gun and start just shooting people? What is going on culturally? And then, of course, you expand that out into the world and you see it's happening globally. It's not just here in the U.S. What is going on with these young men who are just turning to violence and terrorism and killing their own kind? So I decided that I needed to do something. And so I told my web guy, I said, listen, I'm going to just start writing a series of notes and emails or texts or whatever. And I want you to post this on my Facebook page and send it out into parts of the world where there's a lot of problems, a lot of turmoil. And he said, sure, I could do that. And so he targeted Pakistan in the Middle East. He said, there's a lot of terrorism going on there. I'll start sending out your posts over there. I said, okay, fine, sure. And from a few followers within, I don't know, a month or two, I had about 5,000 followers from that part of the world.
Wow.
Still, yeah, just hungry for this information and just desperate for understanding what's happening, why there's so much conflict, why is there so much killing, and if there's anything that they could do. It was like practically calls of desperation contacting me daily. Dr. Ellie, we love what you're doing. What can we do? How can we stop this? How can we be part of the solution? How can we create more peace? How can we bridge East and West? What is going on? This is not how the people of Pakistan feel towards the West, but we're being portrayed in such terrible ways. What can we do? And so I started to just communicate with them, and one thing led to another, and I was invited to give a talk at the International Islamic University in Islamabad to a group of 50 young men who are interested in learning about peace building.
I love it.
Yeah. So it started out there, and the requests kept coming. Please come and talk here and talk there. And all this was done through Facebook and YouTube, and you know, technology is so amazing right now. I was sitting in my office talking to the students halfway across the world.
Fabulous.
Yeah. So that's where that's at right now.
So you have traveled to these Middle Eastern countries and speaking as a woman, and you're not Muslim. So, yes. So for them to accept you and to be so enthralled with what you're saying is just wonderful. That to me is a miracle. You know, I feel like you're divinely guided to create a process of peace. It's fabulous.
That's right. It's really about transcending all these limitations that we put on ourselves, you know, gender, age, ethnicity, religion. These are all limitations that we create and stops us from connecting heart to heart, soul to soul.
And so true. We're going to cut back and hear more about this in just a moment. But right now we're going to take a little break and then we'll come back because this is a very juicy subject and I definitely want to explore this a little deeper.
Have you been stuck, really stuck? I'm Marbeth Dunn with a very special opportunity only for listeners of Having It All Radio. If you'd like to step out of victimhood to become a co-creator of your own abundance and success, sign up now for my Flash of Insight consult at yourmiraclepower.com/insight, I-N-S-I-G-H-T. Not only will we work together one-on-one to release an issue that's been keeping you stuck, you will receive a special bonus, my signature Power of Joy audio program valued at $397. I've been there. I understand the hurt you're going through. Don't delay. Sign up now for your Flash of Insight consult, yourmiraclepower.com/insight.
Choosing to work with Marbeth Dunn was one of the smartest things I ever did. She has an intuitive gift that allows her to meet people where they are so that you can begin to peel away the layers of stuff that keep us from having that soulful and joyful journey that we want. I know in my personal and professional life, I experienced a new sense of well-being and I show up differently. I've had successes in those areas that I don't think were possible before I met and worked with Marbeth. I also have a new confidence in myself, and that makes a world of difference.
So getting back to what we were talking about, Ellie, I think it's so fabulous that you're able to transcend the apparent differences of people and really connect them at the soul level where we are all one. And to be able to share that with other cultures is amazing and break through the beliefs that we have about each other. I think maybe all of the tension and strife and conflict that we have is really just to suddenly realize, okay, enough of this. I don't want this anymore. I want peace. What do you think?
Absolutely. And I think part of what we do as light workers is to be that bridge, you know, help people transcend these limitations and be able to embrace another who on the surface may seem so seemingly different from us. And yet when you're able to connect to their heart and soul, you see that we really are as one.
And so beautifully, yeah, so beautifully said. I remember several years back, there was a meditation group that was focusing on peace in the Middle East. They were focusing on peace in Israel. And while they were meditating, they would meditate at the same time every day and just focusing on peace. And during that period, the conflict dropped dramatically. Do you remember that?
I do, yes.
So that was very cool. And then also, you know, that was really, really wonderful. And I love the way that this is really what I want to know. When you were standing there in Islamabad, you know, and speaking to a group of men, did you feel like that was a culmination of what you were doing, or do you feel like you've got a long way to go?
Well, you know, I was there virtually. I wasn't there physically.
Oh, okay. I just had the impression I saw you there in front of all these men, and I was like, wow, that's impressive.
They saw a video of me. I recorded my talk. And uploaded it on YouTube. And then over there, they accessed it. And I was there. They saw the talk virtually on YouTube. And then afterwards, for the Q&A, it was live. I actually called them. And then we had a Q&A session.
Very cool. Was that on Skype or Zoom?
Yes, it was on Skype.
Wow.
Yeah, so this is like really just like the basics, you know. Of course, if I'm going to be doing this more full time, I have to figure out how to do this in a way that I don't download a lot of the viruses, because I my computer died afterwards because I downloaded a lot of viruses. But it just shows you that someone who's not even tech savvy, has no background in technology, can you know, just with the power of intention, can go halfway across the world and do this work. You know, you don't need a whole lot. It's just, again, it's just having the consciousness to overcome the limitations that we set for ourselves. Because I could have just as easily said, I'm a woman, these are all men, I'm not Muslim, this is University of Islamabad. You know, all these limitations. I'm not technology oriented. These are the millennials. How am I going to be able to connect with them, et cetera, et cetera. So many limitations. And yet I didn't go there. In my heart, I knew that I want to connect with them and to let them know that this work is possible, that you can transcend conflict, that you can create peace, that we can come together and do this work.
And there was also, I was an artist, I think he was a graphic designer in Israel, that said, we don't want to fight Iran. We're done. We don't want to think about war. And so he reached out, I think through social media, with the Iranians. And so they started a project where people, and I think he had a TED talk also that I saw, but
yes,
it was fabulous. There were so many people. They're like, we don't want war. We don't want to hate you. And they met, the groups of Israelis and Iranians met in Germany, and became friends. And I think that's so beautiful because we, you know, in every culture where we feel we perceive conflict with other cultures, we have a sense of a judgment of who these other people are. And once we remove the judgment and step back and come from a higher place and bring spirit in, how can I see this person through the eyes of love? How can I create, you know, a connection here without all of the differences? That's when I think peace is possible. Absolutely. So that's very profound.
But a lot of that work at first begins with the self, right?
So of course.
Otherwise
you're going to be projecting all your issues on other people.
That's right. Exactly right. So, you know, I had to do all this inner work, even though I came from a country where I could have easily seen Muslims as adversary, or that people who were there to terrorize me or kill me, or they, you know, threw me out of my country. I could have gone that direction. I had to do the inner work to let go of that thinking and to embrace my so-called enemy as my own and say, you know, what is it that I need to heal within myself to let go of my judgment around seeing Muslims a certain way? And that was not easy.
Right. No, it takes a lot of inner work and courage.
Yes, and the desire to seek that inner peace, that the desire to find that connection, human to human.
And I think very often people look at peacemakers as being weak, but I believe it's much more powerful. I think that the judgment, the criticism, the creating differences, the creating conflict is the weakness.
I agree. It's very easy to hate.
Yeah.
You don't have to do a whole lot of work to hate, you know, but you have to do a lot of work to love.
People love to create differences, though. They love it. They love to somehow feel that they're better than other people, that, you know, it's me against them. I don't know why that is. Maybe it's because we live in this third dimension of duality. And yet, on the higher levels, it is all about oneness, because that's who we are. We are all one, one self, you know, created in the image of our creator, which is not a physical body. You know, we are all love. That's who we are. So I know I'm preaching to the choir here, but I love what you're doing. You're going out and you're making a difference with people. So with these groups that, you know, where you said that you started working and reaching out because of all the school shootings and the terrorism, what can people do now to embrace more of a loving essence?
I think what's important is to work with our own shadow. You know, we have to take a look at what we're projecting out there and turn that around and say, what is it about that I see out there that I am not seeing in myself? Where is it that I'm limited in my own biography, in my own ancestral history, in my own culture, in my own body, religion, etc.? Where am I dealing with conflict within myself that's getting projected out onto other people or other groups?
Yeah, no, it's very, very true. I think once we start to, everything that we do, we start to create these different religions, and we create these different organizations that might, or, you know, we have football teams. You know, my team is better than yours. My religion is better than yours. We seem to want to create that difference and competitiveness and judgment. So when we take that does create the conflict. So when we take the judgment out of it, and I it's one of the things that I teach is to remove the judgment. It takes you to a different place.
That's right. Then it allows you to embrace diversity or difference.
Yes.
It allows you to understand that all paths are sacred. Not just my path or your path. All paths to the divine are sacred. We just have different ways of expressing and worshiping.
Beautifully said. Yeah.
Because we're different people. We're different. We're of different backgrounds, different upbringings. And so we must have a different way to see and worship and experience the divine.
It's beautiful. I think that if we have difficulty in seeing that, we want to have more peace. I always find that I just ask spirit, you know, source, the universe, how can I see this through the eyes of love? How can I see it, you know, as you do? And then I can move into a different space. Not always immediately, but, you know, it once you have that willingness, then things can start to shift. I want to remind everyone that Dr. Ellie has her own show page on Having It All Radio. And so if you want to learn more about her and her wonderful organization, her Centerpiece Foundation, and her upcoming book and how to access her on social media, then visit her show page on havingitallradio.com. Because she's amazing. I love the fact that you are promoting peace. That to me is just, I had to have you on the show.
Thank you so much. Thank you for reaching out. I think collectively is really how we're going to make some change in the world.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. When we make that collective intention that we're going to create more peace, it is so powerful. And I believe it's spreading. You know, we don't have to feel helpless or hopeless or us versus them. Like the whole political process in the United States is just horrific to me. You know, there's just so much conflict. Talk about conflict. We're not even going to go there. But, you know, if we can just look at things differently. And, you know, after the last election, I think I might have mentioned this on another show, I felt so much anxiety. I'm very empathic. And I didn't know what it was. I thought it was mine. I mean, I forgot to ask, is this mine? So after a couple of weeks, I'm trying everything in my power to calm down and feel better. It's not working. I finally asked, is this mine? And of course it wasn't. And so I dropped into my heart and I sent love and peace to everyone who was experiencing this pain, this fear and anger and all these anxious emotions. And oh, we have just one more minute. And I immediately felt peaceful. So Dr. Ellie, I want to thank you so much for being on the show this week. You are amazing. And next week's guest on Having It All is Deborah DeYoung, author of Dance, 5 Steps to Living Your Best Life. And writing this book propelled her to pursue her dream of motherhood. She has a program that addresses all aspects and ramifications of motherhood from a vibrational viewpoint. Thank you again, Dr. Ellie. I love your message.
Thank you for having me today. Thank you.
Join Marbeth next week on Having It All. Visit havingitallradio.com to learn more about Marbeth Dunn and her special guests. And be sure to download your free report.